Wow. Busted pencils fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking. Education class is in session for Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board. And I might be conducting class today. That's me, Dr. Tim Slucker. And
he's here.
Woo! I mean, you know, I wanted to, though, to ask a question for both of you. Do you like good science fiction, Johnny Lupinacci?
It depends. Yeah, I can get into it. I wouldn't call myself a sci-fi fan, but I can get into some good science fiction from time to time, but it's not my number one go-to, not all my right. number one genre.
Jacob.
Yeah, I gave you a whole show about Star Trek know, last week, and you're trying to do it again. We know Mr. Data and how much you love him, but Tim, there's other things happening in the world. I like science fiction. Yeah.
Okay. Three body problem, Netflix. Jacob, what do you think? I saw it. You've seen it, right?
I've seen some of it. I started watching it. I did not finish. I saw the cool historical scene of the Cultural Revolution at the beginning, and I thought, wow, okay. This is an intense, well done thing. And then I saw a bunch of human beings with tarps on their back being used as a giant analog computer. I thought, this is a Tim Slucker idea. I'm not a doctor. I can't follow. So I thought I would save it.
Great show, Johnny, though, man. I mean, I watched it, I think, like a year or so ago, last year. Great Netflix series, man, especially as a math nerd myself. But yeah, I liked this one.
I'm only on to episode like four.
Oh, good.
Five.
I was about to be I thought we were gonna break right into it.
I was getting ready to
oh man, I love when this happens, and I was about to tell you, but yeah, I like it, man. And it's related to, I mean, I love when any genre, especially with a tinge of science fiction, you know, is close enough to like, what do they, it's just gotta be like a category for it. Everybody listening right now is cringing because you're probably saying it as I'm not able to put, you know, get that word. But like, you know, like historical fictions or like close to accurate fictions.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of those that like you watch and it's kind of pretty close to, you raise your eyebrow a little bit and you're like, this could be going on. You know, like not too far off. But yeah, I love the show, man.
Distinction you're talking about, Johnny, I think, Tim, maybe you can hop in because you're a Star Trek expert. But the thing that you would talk about there is the distinction between hard sci-fi and soft sci-fi, where hard sci-fi, you have real, you know, those super realistic rules in place that like you can see this really happening in the future versus something like Star Wars, which is sci-fi. Right. But the rules and the science might not actually make any sense.
Yeah, there's the element of possibility of this where, some sci-fi is, you know, say Star Wars is a great example of more of, you know, a story that happens to take place in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great story.
Yes.
The science part of sci-fi to Star Wars, not really. But in this show, I came across it because, you know, I'm getting these, I don't know, AI algorithms that are driving news to me. And I must have at some point clicked on something sci-fi. And now I'm getting bombarded in my Google kind of, hey, check this stuff out. All these sci-fi recommendations, and I read this one and I started doing it. I'm like,
well, Tim, you've always been a fan of math and physics. So, you know, just kidding. Maybe that's it too. Like you're confronting some of your math phobias by finding these excellent, you know, shows that are based loosely around, you know, the work of mathematicians and physicists. And, you know, it's just desensitizing you to that phobia that you always speak of here on Busted Pencils.
Yeah, the whole connection to, you know, communication. But looking at it, though, it was like there's also this weird kind of like AI component, even though we're not exactly sure. And we've spent a lot of time, you know, on this show talking about AI and either.
I would say more VR than AI, but, you know, technology, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about the show, right?
Well, no, I'm kind of moving in and these technologies. And I mean, the whole idea potentially.
You're only three episodes in. So,
yeah.
Spoiler alert, lots of VR, folks.
Okay. The VR part is actually kind of cool, but about the potential of, you know, are they truly talking to?
Well, I'll tell you what, Tim, I immediately went and grabbed my copy of Silent Spring and hit it.
See, like right there, there's a great connection. And so for any of you like environmental sustainable hippies like me, you watch this and you're like, oh my God, great stuff. Anyway, when they're quote talking, it's like, are they really talking
right
to true intelligence, or are they talking? And so you're thinking about this intelligence, and I've been seeing just a lot of back and forth. What is it good for? What's it capable of? And it made me think, well, you know, we've actually been talking a lot about the alpha school, the 2-hour learning. And, I've been probably on a cheerleading bandwagon for the alpha school. And, just 2 days ago, Wired Magazine put out a piece incredibly critical of Alpha School. In fact, highlighting, looking at parents that have said, we want out. All is not necessarily well. And it's a paid version that you have to get into. But looking at other kind of criticisms, I'm just wondering if we jumped on a bandwagon before looking at true results, or is this a hit piece that is actually designed to, throw a whole bunch of poop on, an idea that has the ability to upend the status quo? And this is really the status quo fighting back and saying all is not well. So looking at that, is the legitimacy of a criticism by a few parents really enough to blow up the whole idea of what Alpha School's about? Or is it status quo propaganda? Jacob, you had your hand up.
Tim, I think that it's great to have this sort of criticism, because we don't talk about Alpha School because we're early investors in Alpha School. We don't talk to Mike Bigley because, we get something on the back end from Mike Bigley. We talk about these guys because we believe in the effort to try to find new ways of doing things, giving novel things an experiment, seeing where things go, not being stuck doing things the way they always have been. So when you have feedback, the only thing I think we should look at that. We should evaluate it, see what do we think about this feedback, because we want it to get better. So, Frank, if you come to me with criticism of something we've said or something we support, I'm happy to see that, because I think we're always trying to grow with these experiments.
Mm. Same. And I'll put loose quotations around we, because I don't think I've ever fully jumped on the bandwagon of Alpha School, except I love, like Jacob said, I do, and Tim, you and I have talked about this a bunch. I'm like, I don't know about this, but what I do know is all three of us have hammered home this point. School's got to change.
Right.
And this is a pretty big effort to change it. We're all pretty apprehensive of any, silver bullet or, big solution that, is the one size fits all. I don't think like our guests who've come on have proposed, hey, we're the one size fits all. We're the solution.
Yeah.
We're the savior to education, the replacement. So it's exciting to hear what's happening. And I've long, Tim, we've talked about it, long been a fan of rethinking the school day, rethinking the work week, really imagining and not only being creative about it, but leaning into scientific consensus on how we know kids learn at different developmental stages of their learning. So more playtime for young students and not less time for our older or more mature students. You know, like you've said it over and over, the more you sit and get, it tends to be like the formula. The longer you're in school, like the older you get, the more you're sitting down and listening and learning that way, as opposed to all the different ways we know that even adult learners need to be engaged. So anything that shakes up schools is always going to be something we're going to ask questions about and hear from here on Busted Pencils, because that's the three of us. We want to know what's happening out there in the world that says we know what we do now could be so much better, but yet, you know, it takes a little bit of a leap of faith, some courage, some bravery, you know, to jump out there and say, hey, we're going to do things differently. And I'll say this, it's great to get feedback like Jacob said, Tim, but I think it's your initial question, you know, is this critique, you know, exposing Alpha School, or is it status quo noise? Mm-hmm. You know, it's both, right? Mm. Anytime you start to say, hey, we've done this for the better part of a couple hundred years and we're going to do it differently, there's going to be a whole lot of people that are like, wait, no, you can't do that. And there's going to be some feedback or some kickback, some noise to doing things differently. Does that mean we ignore the noise? No, like Jacob said, like, listen to it. Let's hear. Like, it's probably a valid experience, right? I don't know. I can't wait to take a look at this piece, Tim. I hope you send it out to us, because it would be great to further discuss it, maybe on our Saturday afternoon show at more length, or maybe even dive into a little bit of it today if you want to drive that bus. But one of the things about that I get excited about is, hey, let's figure out what this noise is all about, because it might be saying, hey, if you're trying to do something differently, then we would prefer you just do it the same, which all of us carry a little bit of Stockholm syndrome from our schooling experience. How many times have I, you know, have we done, any teacher out there listening, you've done some new activity in class, you know, and students are like, oh, why can't you just give us a worksheet? Oh, like, come on. Can't we just take a quiz can't we just do practice problems and do a quiz at the end of the week? Like the other math teachers, like, no, we're going to really dive in and engage as learners. Well, sometimes that's different than how we've been learning, and it feels a little bit uncomfortable. And so we speak out against even the necessary or important changes. So I'm excited to look into this. Without saying I'm a big fan of Alpha School, they're part of school change, and I'm a big fan of school change, man.
Well, so the criticism, yeah, maybe we'll dig deeper for a longer show, but I'm not going to say I'm a fan of Alpha School as much as I'm a fan of the disruption to the status quo about teaching and learning, and I do think their premise of, you know, essentially like, man, look, the droning, the boring, the academic rhetoric, whatever, you know, get it done and spend the rest of the day though doing application practical thing. I think that I love the model. I got to tell you that what it appears though to me is that this kind of falls into the, it's a criticism of a private school. And now, like, I'm not seeing any new novel criticisms that would make us go, oh, that's interesting. Instead, the criticisms come down to, hey, guess what? In a private school like this, guess what? Smart elite kids do really well. Poor kids don't, and therefore it's a crappy experience, and public schools don't have the choice to only pick great kids. And so to me, I'm kind of I'm more disturbed by the criticism itself not being new.
Yeah.
The criticism comes back to almost like a, look, it's a private school, and here is the criticism of private schools, of which we have done on this show for years, hardcore criticism of private schooling from the standpoint of pulling resources potentially from public schools, right?
Yeah, that's the point, Tim.
Right.
I separate out and clarify for listeners. Yeah. And Tim, you're pretty, and I'm also a avid supporter of our public schools. Obviously, we say it over and over, public education is the bedrock of democracies. But I think in the landscape that we're in, that what often get called private schools sometimes operate in more public ways than local public schools. So I love what Jonathan Gierko, publicization guy, right? You know, introduces, let's actually hold all schools accountable to their accessibility, to the ways that they meet children's learning needs, and be weary of the, right, only Siths speak in absolutes, sci-fi reference there for you. And the, is it public or is it private critique? To my opinion, belabored at this point. But I like that distinction you make, that, because I'm a little different. Like, I support some private schools. Yeah. I think that they do really novel and wonderful things, and they're not for everybody in terms of, sometimes they are cost prohibitive, but that doesn't mean they should be the only good education, right? And if we have a strong public school system, those private options can be stronger or weaker. They just are different options, but they're not the only better option, right? So without strong public schools, there aren't really strong private schools. The thing about this one though, Tim, is I think when I look at it, I ask, is it something that's inaccessible, or the quality of the education isn't serving the community, right? And I don't know that that's not necessarily true from this critique. I can't get into it right away because you sent me the link, but I got to subscribe to Wired Magazine. I'm not an avid Wired Magazine guy. Go figure. But I'll get into it. But also, one of the things that I'm curious about, if we're diving in, is parents' and students' experience with the time they spend in technologically mediated learning. You know, you've talked about it. We're removing schools, phones from classrooms and different things. And students are saying they're enjoying that human time together. They don't say human time. It's like they talk about, like, I like talking with my friends, or I like that my teacher has us discuss with one another, and then, you know, says, hey, now it's an opportunity to, you know, go to ChatGPT or wherever. Now that we've had a small group discussion and we have generated some ideas, see what other ideas might be out there, and more human physical connection being great. I've just always wondered, oh, great, I can't wait to hear the experiences of students and families, because anytime we're spending that much time on computers or on devices, and this could be at a public school or a private school for all I care, you know, there are questions about surveillance. There are questions about young people's development. There are questions about how does this also align with the research, you know, coming out of, learning scientists and psychologists who are saying we have increased in anxiety and depression in young people because of the amount of time they're engaged in social media. Not saying that this is all social media learning time in the alpha school. I know for a fact that it's not that. We've talked to, you know, teachers and representatives from those schools. But I just think that all the things start to connect in some ways, and I wonder what those experiences are. And it wouldn't surprise me that, sadly, right now in our culture, negative experiences are what we hear louder than positive experiences, right? So I'm not saying we're the show that listens to everyone, but in a sense, that's democracy. Let's get all the information, right? And hear the experience the educators are having, hear the diverse experiences that different students and families are having. Because if we only hear the complaints, right? What's it called? The squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Or the oil, right? Yeah. We slip into those kind of those problematic patterns of, well, if you complain, right, then you kind of get heard. And that's not how democracy works. When we share what our needs are, what's working, what's not working, and we figure that out together, then we're progressing as a stronger democracy, as a stronger education system. So I think that's my long-winded way of what Jacob was saying, right? Like, let's get all the information together and let's chop it up.
I want to see this information from you, Tim, behind your top secret paywall you've got over there.
Yeah, His subscriber paywall, man.
You got to get your buddy Claude to send us a summary so we can find out what actually he was
saying. Tim either has jailbreaked internet or more subscriptions than anybody I know.
No, you know what I do is I fall for the free, you know.
Oh, you sign up for the trials.
Two-week trial, and then I forget to cancel it, and then I get yelled at by my wife.
Well, hey.
You know, and so I don't know. Yeah, whenever I see a good story, though, I'm very hard to kind of be like, you know, the paywall is not something I don't have any problem taking out the paywall because I want to see this stuff. And yeah.
I appreciate that about you, Tim. That's good, man. You're supporting journalism. I think that's something like I'm definitely feeling like, I should do more of that.
I'm unintentionally supporting journalism because I have all my intention is to get free access and unsubscribe. It's just that my laziness usually stops me from unsubscribing, and then I have a year of access, which actually then turns out pretty good because then I have a year of access.
I'll say too, Wired's pretty good, man. I have in the past really enjoyed and looked up to the quality of work that comes from Wired. So Jim, you've convinced me. I'm going to subscribe. I'm going to get this article and I'll do my homework.
Well, so I just see again this, yeah, and I'm glad you're going to get the article, and I'll actually get a PDF too for people.
Tim, no, we're all going to subscribe. Come on.
I know, but if you look at for this, you said I really get a sense of saying that this is pushback, and the criticism is that, well, it's an elite private school and they can do these things. And in fact, look, here's some angry parents whose kids didn't have success. Therefore, we know now because it's, you know, a private school, it didn't work. And what I wouldn't want to frame this is coming back of going, is it really the disruption of the status quo model that is causing the criticism? Because we see in Mike Bigley, you know, Brittany Waltz, CISA 4, rural Wisconsin, them breaking the model and doing it with all kids. And I get it. I'm kind of wanting to look at this and going, you know, wait a minute, because it's private and we've kind of pushed on that and saying, hey, it might not be for everybody, but the challenge to the model, the framing, the 150-year-old industrial sit in rows, you know, sort kids, put them in, you know, programs that don't benefit them. We had, you know, Ira David Sokol on back, you know, pointing out that, you know, the history of the American public school. Not public schooling as an ideal of a bedrock of democracy, but the system of public schooling that was put forth really hasn't been that great of a benefit, particularly for kids who have a sense of going, you know, or I'm going to say this now, particularly for kids who have any sense of wonderment, you know, they haven't been great places. And here Alpha School comes along, and then we got Mike Bigley, CISA 4. And I wonder here too, because what is the criticism going to potentially be of what they're doing in Mike Bigley's area up there? I got a sense that the criticism will be largely, that's not how I experience schooling, and therefore it must not be great, or a certain kid might not fit in. You know, and people who've listened to, again, Busted Pencils before Civic Media, just the podcast, you know, say we're on 15, going on 15 years now, almost of doing some form of this. And people say, boy, you've changed your tune. I don't know if I've changed my tune as much as I'm just more saying that, man, when we see examples of teaching and learning that challenges the way we've always done teaching and learning, we need to look at it, and then we need to look at the criticism, because it's not a public-private school argument here for me. And what's happening in what I sense in this critique is that these are largely public school advocates critiquing a private school, and that the critique of the teaching and learning, the fact that it might not fit a couple kids, is then being sucked up into this grand narrative of going, hey, look at this really expensive program that really fails most kids. And I don't know that it fails most kids. And I would point out that, again, what does fails, you know, most kids? I'm really getting sensitive to saying, like, let's decide what it is we're criticizing first. I have no problem criticizing the intentional defunding of our public school system and derailing its democratic roots and what it does. You know, I have no problem, though, also, and Johnny, too, we have no problem criticizing the crap that goes on sometimes in what we call teaching and learning in public schools, because of that's what we're supposed to do. The foundation, though, of public schools, and yeah, when public schools are defunded to fund private schools, that's the criticism. I've got no problem hitting hard and criticizing that. Looking at, Johnny, this might come back to what you were saying. Looking at good teaching and learning, private, public, semi-public, semi-private, that is just looking at good teaching and learning. And therefore, I'm not going to say, because it's private, it must be bad. That's not what I want. And I just feel like this criticism is coming more from, oh, look, here's somebody who's trying to put together a rich private school, and it just doesn't work. That, and I don't know that it doesn't work. Jacob,
that is, yeah, Tim, that's so disappointing to me, Tim, because I welcomed the news of this criticism when you told it to me. I thought that is really good to hear. And Johnny, you were talking about the general quality of the journalism over there. But if it's just that sort of surface level critique, you know, you read the words alpha school is a private school that, okay, I don't need to hear that. You got me at private school. I'm against it. It sounds terrible. That's not addressing the interesting thing about this. And there are probably plenty of ways to have intelligent, informed criticisms of this. I mean, you bring up in that article, or Tim, you were bringing up just on the surface, you know, questions of, well, hey, do kids actually do better due to the methodology here, or is it just the same bump you see because you're going to St. Mary's and, you know, you have the benefits of a private school? There are so many different things here you could look at, and if they only went as deep as, that's a private school, I don't like it, that's disappointing. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and it's important to criticize the actual things happening.
Well, and Tim, the heading right of the article says, you know, where surveillance of kids, software in lieu of teachers, mm-hmm. right, to be an education in and of itself. You know, we've asked the people, not the students at Alpha School, but, you know, some of the educators and leaders involved in this school change model. And they, like, specifically, I said, you know, debunk the myth that this mm-hmm. isn't just teachers replaced by computers and software. And that's the thing too. I'm like anxious and eager, like equal parts of anxiety and excitement to read this article and this critique, because we've now heard some different stories mm-hmm. because, you know, we've heard that, hey, this isn't about any software or any program or any use of AI replacing teachers. It's still the most important component of any education is that relationship that students have with other students and with their educators. And so, you know, I'm eager to hear the experiences captured in the Wire article, but also come back around to that. Tim, you talked about good education, what we know works. And the whole critique of should we even have private schools, it goes away if the public schools are great. Mm. And so almost, it, you know, it's, it, we've talked about this so many times. If you make education in your country a marketized commodity, then you sort of manufacture this level of competition that is anti-democratic, and it's anti, it's against the strength of your country, right? So in other words, if a moniker of strong democracies is our strong public education systems, those should not be different if you're rich or you're poor. Now we know there are some options around that around the world. Like, hey, maybe if I'm really rich, I can afford an option of, instead of public school, I'm going to go to this elite private academy. And those have existed since before public schools will exist side by side with public schools. And, you know, I don't think you'll ever see an end to public education, but, you know, they'll always be around, those elite privates. But the alternative should be so good that it's a unique choice that those private academies are a particular fit. Maybe it's because they have a really awesome baseball program, or they really specialize in something unique, or they're, you know, they accommodate and sort of build community around a particular set of religious beliefs. Okay, great. That's part of freedom of expression in this country to organize and have that. But the public school system is free at the point of access, right? So we know there's some other levels to that. It's not free. It's funded by taxpayer dollars and other, you know, contributions, but it's so well funded and it's so good that there isn't, it isn't putting families and communities, ultimately the students, in this position of, unless I can afford a better education, I'm not going to get one. Right. And we often live in those kinds of contexts where the charter is a good option because the public school isn't a great public school. And so it's enticing. And so parents move families to that local charter school or to the other things. We've created and manufactured competition or market ideology onto public education. And it's not without consequences. And so here we are in that situation. And I think maybe it's almost time to have Jonathan Gierko, Dr. Gierko, yeah, back on, because this is his book, man, Publicization. I'm not just plugging it because I'm a buddy of his. I only know him because that's this some groundbreaking ways to talk about the landscape we're in right now as parents, as educators, as having a public system, you know, that needs some resuscitation, that needs some support and has been defunded and thrown into this, you know, market competition world that it was not set up for, that many decades of school leaders and excellent teachers were not trained to do their best in, right? And so we're really seeing a changed landscape. So I think all this kind of feeds into those great discussions around new models, school change, public versus private. Is there such thing? Right? Or how do we hold all schools accountable to what Jonathan Gierko calls publicization, reclaiming that? What does it mean to be public? Well, he's got some really important, like, signifiers of that, right? And I love that. Like, you know, are they accountable to the well-being and the growth of their students? Are they accountable to all students in their communities, not just being selective? Well, here's some ones that do really well on tests. Well, we'll admit those. Right, that selective enrollment stuff that oftentimes you see in some of these charters or in some of these elite alternatives. And I'm not saying I know or have proof that Alpha is that, right? So I get excited about that conversation, really looking at what does it mean to be part of public education, and maybe some of the labels we have right now are misleading.
Mm. And with that, now it's time for your moment of Zen. I am convinced that imprisonment is a way of pretending to solve the problem of crime. It does nothing for the victims of crime, but perpetuates the idea of retribution, thus maintaining the endless cycle of violence in our culture.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils Class in Session today. And you could always grab great podcasts like this one. Just head on over to bustedpencils.com, or you can check the Civic Media website or wherever it is you get your podcast from. Just search Busted Pencils. You'll find us. Hey, and don't you forget to find us throughout the week, beginning each week with homerooms, finding a class in session midweek, and always wrapping up the week with producer's choice. And listen up, pencil busters. You can always catch us on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.